Welcome to this edition of the Better Health Radio Show. And standing by, as per usual, we've got Dr. Renee Boyce. She's the host of the program, and she usually has a guest or two with her. Today she has another guest. So let's say good evening to the good doctor, and let's find out what today's program is all about. Good evening, Doc.
Hi, good evening, Gretchen. How are you?
I'm not too bad, as usual. I'm happy to be here, happy to spend the time here with you.
Yes, it has been so long. We missed
three shows in a row. Quite a few.
We had to do a repeat show. Then we had Hurricane Elsa, where we lost electricity. And then we had the
press conference last week. Right.
But I'm really happy to be here.
They try their best to keep us apart, don't they? They try their best, but it will not.
They cannot. It cannot. I'm sure that there's a song somewhere that speaks about not being able to keep us apart.
Yeah, we'll find it.
Good evening to everybody, and welcome again to the Better Health Radio Show. Like I said just now, it's felt like it's been so long. It feels as though it's been so long, but I'm glad to be back with you. This is the Better Health Radio Show, where we help you to live your best life. And today, as with every show, we have a packed show full of wonderful information that will help you to be better in terms of taking care of your health. I'll introduce my guest to you in just a few minutes, but we are backed up with the shout outs, so let's go ahead and do those. First, I have to say hello to Daphne Griffith. I heard from her a little earlier today, and I tried to get into contact with her again just to check in on her. So I hope you're listening and able to hear us, Daphne, sending you your shout out. I also want to say hello to Miss Jones. She popped in the office to say hi late last week, just to say hi. And it's those little things that brighten your day when somebody just pops in to say hi. We also want to say good evening to Mr. and Mrs. Williams over there in St. Philip. Hope that you are doing what you're supposed to be doing, making those strides. And lastly, I want to say a special hello to Gail. Gail left a message on the office phone. She wanted to check in and see how I was doing after the storm, and I thought it was so thoughtful. So Gail, I am reaching out to you to let you know that it was appreciated and we are doing well. So enough chatter. We have a lot of work to do today. Gretchen, did I cover everybody?
Yes, I was looking at the note you sent me and you said Joan, so I think we're good to go.
Right, because with age, I have been sending the messages to Gretchen. Just so that I don't forget. Yes,
Dr. Hoping that I remember. Yes. Hoping that I remember.
She's here looking at me like, age, what are you talking about? Nevertheless, my guest this evening is a friend of mine, a wonderful doctor, brilliant doctor. She doesn't want me to tell you that, but she is brilliant. She's a wonderful doctor. Dr. Natasha Sobers. She is a lecturer in epidemiology at the University of the West Indies, and she'll briefly tell you what epidemiology is. She's also the lead researcher at the George Allen Center for Chronic Disease Research and the assistant director there as well. And you see, this is why I talk about age, because Natasha did give me this information, but it somehow has slipped through my brain. And I was too ashamed to look up the information again on my phone. But nevertheless, good evening, Natasha, and welcome.
Hi, good evening, Dr. Boyce, and thank you very much for having me. Thank you very much for the introduction. And I'm really looking forward to the program this evening, focusing on NCDs.
So just for our listeners, exactly what is epidemiology?
Oh yes, what is epidemiology? So I think we've been hearing about it quite a bit because of COVID-19, but essentially epidemiology is the study of the trends in diseases and describing what causes diseases, who's most likely to get a disease, who's less likely to get it, where is it occurring, mapping some of the areas that it's occurring. And so it could be any disease, that we're studying the trends for. So it could be COVID-19, So many persons would have heard about how the epidemiologists are looking into the trends in COVID-19. But specifically, I tend to focus a lot on non-communicable diseases, the NCDs, in my research, although for the past year, I've also been looking at the trends in COVID-19, just because it's here and present.
Very present.
It kind of needs all help, all hands on deck.
So the basically, NCDs. Yeah, for our listeners again, NCDs, these are non-communicable diseases, and we actually say CNCDs for chronic non-communicable diseases. So let's break that down for those persons who are listening to us this evening.
Yeah, so I mean, there are many chronic NCDs, but the most common ones really are cardiovascular disease. And we're thinking heart attacks, strokes, hypertension, those types of things. The next most common would be diabetes. That's what we hear about a lot. We also hear about cancer. So cancers are covered under that NCD's umbrella. Also chronic respiratory diseases like asthma, like chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Those are also NCDs. And then a very big group would be the mental health conditions. So the mental health conditions are also considered chronic non-communicable diseases. So those are sort of like the big five, the cardiovascular disease, diabetes, chronic respiratory disease, cancer, and mental health diseases. Those are the big five of chronic diseases.
So all things being equal on the Better Health Radio Show, we would normally take the last 2 weeks out in December and the first week in January. So that would leave us with about, let's say, 49 shows all being equal. And that's approximately, let's say, 4 shows a month. Guaranteed in there somewhere at least once a month, we discuss some variation of an NCD. And the thought would be, why are we doing this again? And I've said this on the show before, you know, why are we flogging this horse of NCDs? Why are we flogging this horse of NCDs?
Yeah, it's absolutely important because 80% of our deaths are from NCDs. So we cannot get away from this horse of NCDs. And while we flogged COVID-19 and got so tired of it this year, there were 4 million deaths from COVID and it caused lots of lockdowns. There were 4 million worldwide. There were 17 million deaths from cardiovascular disease alone. Not from NCDs, 17 million from cardiovascular disease alone.
Four times the amount.
So, I mean, we have to talk about it because we do not have it under control yet. And of course there are going to be deaths, we have to die. But it's the premature deaths and the disability that's occurring as a result of the NCDs that we're concerned about. Because there are persons and we are living longer, but what we've also found is that we're living longer with disability. And we actually want to live healthier, longer lives, not healthier, sicker lives. So it's really to improve that longevity and improve that healthy aging. This is the decade of healthy aging. So we want to talk more about these things so that we can prevent premature deaths and age in a healthy manner.
Yeah, to put it in more visual terms, for example, let's say there was somebody who suffered a heart attack at age, let's put them at 63, for example. So the medical team, they were able to give them all of the right drugs and so on and so forth, and they survived the heart attack. But they were left with significant damage to the heart wall. And as a result, this person is a candidate for heart failure. So whilst we've kept them alive, we have still living a person who has reduced function, reduced capacity, who's going to be straining the healthcare system because they're going to be, in some cases, in and out of hospital requiring treatment, not able to work, so they can't contribute to NIS and pensions and so on. So I agree with you completely about trying to age more healthily than we are doing now. And it's for each of us to do. And we as adults have to start with our children trying to get them to get these healthy ideas ingrained before it's too late for them. So we have this bad picture. It is a bad picture. It's terrible. Of 80% of our deaths being as a result of these NCDs. How has COVID-19, in your opinion, your research investigations, how has this impacted upon these diseases?
Yeah, so great question. And I don't necessarily want to focus on the 80% in NCD deaths. I want to focus a lot on the premature deaths, the ones that are occurring early, and the disability, the person you just described, who's 63 and, you know, having a heart attack and then has to live with the outcome and live with that stroke. And so how has it impacted? In terms of the numbers, we're still sort of crunching the numbers in terms of has it increased heart attacks and increased strokes and so on. We're not completely sure about what impact it has had thinking about Barbados. But we do know that people with underlying health conditions like the heart attacks and the diabetes, they have an increased risk of having severe COVID-19. And of course, they're more likely to die from COVID-19. So there's that. We also know that, unfortunately, the persons in this past year, with all the lockdowns and the reopenings and changes in the way that the clinics have been functioning, some of the resources for taking care of people with NCDs, those have been reduced. And it's not a Barbados thing. It is not even a regional thing. It has happened regionally. It has happened globally. Because we only have so many nurses and doctors, and their tasks have been diverted towards dealing with COVID-19. And that has, in some ways, impacted the way that we have managed NCDs. And like you, I just wanted to give a visual for that. I met a lady a few weeks ago who said, yes, the doctor has been calling and rewriting prescriptions at the polyclinic, but she has not actually visually seen a physician since October 2019. Yeah. And sure, we can think of telemedicine and so on, but this person is well over 70, and the visual face-to-face contact is very impactful. And so we have to think about how COVID-19 and the lockdowns, the protections that we've been putting in place has affected the management of our conditions, the management of hypertension, the management of diabetes. I think it has had quite an impact on those conditions. Yeah. I think it's also had an impact on people's health-seeking behavior. Sorry,
I was just about to talk about the health-seeking behavior in two ways. Yes. The first way you mentioned about the elderly female, for elderly persons and for persons in general, that contact with your physician, it does something for you with respect to, yes, managing your illness, but there are also many people who are presenting to their doctors, not necessarily with a physical complaint, but mental health issues that they need to get off their chest. And certainly this COVID-19 has impacted seriously on the mental health of individuals. We do have a show coming up in a little bit about mental health disorders, and that discussion will come out even more. But persons do like going to their doctor. There are some people who don't want to see a doctor. We know that they're those persons. But persons do like having that conversation, like to engage with their doctor, like to see them, even just to say hi sometimes. And as a result of the necessary protective rules we've had to put in place, that health-seeking behavior has to change. And it's also changed because persons are afraid to go into the healthcare institutions. People are afraid to go out of their houses. So certainly, I remember we had a discussion with Dr. Scantlebury, the cardiologist, and she said that one of the repercussions was going to be those persons who were afraid to seek healthcare coming in now in more severe cases. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I absolutely agree, actually. There are persons then who are afraid to seek care, but then there are also those who are less likely to go and stand in the lines that are necessary for something like hypertension. Where hypertension, you don't have any symptoms. You can have a blood pressure of 200 and something, you know, over 110, and you can feel quite good, and the next day have a stroke. And those are the people that I am concerned about, just like Dr. Scantlebury. Yes, for heart attacks, but also absolutely for the stroke. So we have people walking around with hypertension, which we call the silent killer intentionally.
For a reason.
For a reason, right? Because they're walking around with this condition and they are feeling quite good, but they're really on the verge of a stroke, and they're less likely, because they feel good, because they feel fine at the time, they're less likely to walk to their polyclinic and stand in a line and get tests and get their blood pressure reviewed. Those are the persons that you're really very concerned about. And the thought then that maybe we're going to have to see those increasing cases. So that is definitely a concern.
One of the questions in a previous end of year quiz was, what is the most common symptom for hypertension? And caller after caller after caller was saying headache. And the most common symptom is none. You see that figure that you called there just now, 200 and something over 110? And this is, I like the fact that I had this experience so that I can share with the listening public. After I had my son and I went for my checkup, the doctor took my blood pressure and she said, okay, I'll do this again. So I was like, okay, no problem. And then she said, okay, we have a little problem here. My blood pressure was 220 on 110. And I was sitting there absolutely fine. No symptoms. I was fine. So was that
felt fine.
Related yes, felt fine. I wasn't fine. Mm. But whilst that might have been related to pregnancy, it just goes to show that 220 over 110 is very reachable, and there are many people who are quite happily walking around like this. So there was something a couple months back where they were doing a hypertension check, a global hypertension day, it was, I believe, where persons were being asked to just go to their healthcare provider just to have their blood pressure checked. So we don't have to wait for that day. Make sure that you get it done. Make sure you get it done.
So that, I think, May measurement month.
Yes. You know, I couldn't remember the right name for it, but yes. So don't wait till next year, May, to go and get your blood pressure checked for another measurement month. As soon as you can, you know, see your general practitioner, wherever he or she might be. So for those who are just joining us, we are having a wonderful discussion with Dr. Natasha Sobers about the chronic non-communicable diseases. We were talking about how they have been influenced or how they might influence COVID-19 infections. And we're also going to talk about what can be done about this problem, because it makes no sense having a problem and doing absolutely nothing about it. What are some of the things that you do day to day at the CDRC with respect to NCDs, so that our listeners can get an idea of what goes on there and why it's beneficial for medicine?
Right. Okay. Excellent question again. So we know that even before COVID, we know that one of the best ways in terms of a system to manage the NCDs is to include the community and include elements of self-management. So there's this chronic care model that tells us that in managing NCDs, we should be thinking, yes, of the health system. So yes, we're putting things in the polyclinic and people should be going to see their doctor, and that's important. But it's also important for us to include community resources and community-based systems and self-management support in guiding chronic disease. And so that's one of the ways that we help at GACDRC. We also help, and we're going to get to this, in assessing how the healthcare system is doing in managing NCDs. But one of the ways we definitely help is in community-based. So we are focusing, some of the things that we focus on is implementation research, so that we are not simply describing the problem, but we do that as well, but we are also helping to problem. So for example, we are currently involved in research in churches, where we are inviting church groups, church members and their community to contact us to have people be screened for high blood pressure. So yes, we want people who have high blood pressure, but also people who don't know that they have high blood pressure to be screened. Once they're screened, if we find that they have uncontrolled high blood pressure, they are then given the opportunity to take part in a workshop, a self-management workshop, because that is one of the tenets of chronic care model and helping the health system to take care of our diseases. So going into the community as a church, the churches, other community-based resources can be places where people can get their blood pressure taken, can get their screening done, right? And we're trying to promote that. And then once we find a problem, the church and the community-based resources can also be a place where we can help manage, help support people. And part of self-management is encouraging people to see their doctor. Part of self-management is diet and lifestyle and physical activity and stress management. Those are all components of the self-management workshops that we are offering. Dr. Quimby at the research center, she's also doing one with diabetes, she's done one in several churches already, where we found that persons with diabetes or pre-diabetes, we've helped them to lose weight on an 800 calorie diet. Yes, yeah. Yes, 800 calories for 12 weeks. And actually found we've been able to reduce their HbA1c and so on. So we've been working on implementation studies that are getting in there and helping the community to help itself, because managing chronic diseases is for the healthcare system, yes, but it's also about community management and it's also about self-management.
Certainly, Natasha, because persons don't live in the healthcare system. Persons live in the community. Persons live with themselves, or, you know, they live with their family, but, you know, each individual is responsible for his or her health. I have said before, I said it in the wrong way, but I am not responsible for an individual's health. My role as a physician is to guide, but yes. I can't pour tablets down your throat. I can't make you walk around the garrison or around your neighborhood. I mean, sometimes I can't even make myself walk around my neighborhood. Yes. So how am I going to get you to do it? But yes, certainly it's to encourage and to let persons know that within their hands, they have the ability to change, yes, the outcome, mm-hmm, of their life, to change the course of their life. You know, some cheeky person, Dr. Sobers, might be asking, so why you put it in the churches?
Yeah, so excellent question. That's only a start. This is for us, it's thinking about the community. And so we started with one community base, and as a research center, we like to pilot things because we want to be careful. So this is considered the pilot. The church is one community base, and we are learning from our experience in the churches. We're learning how do the leaders feel about this project being in their church. We're learning how do people feel about us coming out to them. We're learning about this particular context. We also place it in the churches because they, you know, they tend to have a nice structure, and there are so many of them in Barbados. Yeah. All right, so we haven't chosen a particular denomination. We've just gone to like as many as we can, and there are so many. But we didn't go into the rum shops because they didn't have a structure, even though there are many of those as well. So we want to learn from what is happening in the context of the churches. And then when we pilot this, then we can think about the next step in what we call implementation is scale up. Yes. So we want to pilot first, understand the dynamics, understand what is happening within the community, understand what's the best way to spread this to the community, and support the healthcare system. And then we will also roll out to other community bases as well. But the churches are very good structure. They're already in the community. There are many of them. Those are some of the reasons that we chose the church. And also because of the social support and networking that's in the church. Churches are known for their social support. And these workshops that we are working with, they rely a lot on social support. We're teaching people how to action plan. So you said, Dr. Boyce, that you can't force anybody to go. So one of the things that we do in these workshops is that we help people to decide what their goals are going to be, not your goals for them, exactly, but what their goals are going to be. And we say every week in the workshop, what is your goal for the next week? Not my goal for you, but you set a goal. you action plan, you problem solve. So the skills that are taught in the workshop focus on how we get people to manage their condition on a day-to-day basis when they're not seeing you like every 3 months. And we think that this is absolutely critical, especially in the context of COVID, especially with the less contact that we're having. So that's what this is one of the ways that we think we can support the health system.
Yeah, one of the things that persons you find as a doctor, that those persons who have a vested interest in their health, it is so much easier to manage them. So it's not the case that if we have a difficult patient who, you know, you're going to throw your hands in the air, you're not going to trade with them. But certainly what you want individuals to understand is that if you understand, first of all, I think that's where it is. We as physicians, Dr. Sobers, we are so very guilty, generally speaking, of not educating our patients. Yes. And unfortunately, many of them still are clueless about what they have, what it means for them, what the implications are for their life, for their quality of life, what those implications are for their family. And certainly, if you had persons buying into their illness as it was, then I think that you would get a better outcome in terms of adherence and compliance. I think adherence is the word as opposed to compliance. So did you get any negative responses from the church when you went into the churches? Were you met with any resistance for any particular reason?
No, not yet. No. Actually, the churches have been very comfortable with opening. Of course, there's the COVID-19 restrictions. That has been a challenge in terms of just making sure that we meet all those restrictions. So we haven't had as many people as we would like. We have to stick with the numbers with the COVID-19 restrictions. We are extremely careful because we had to submit all of our things, not just to the churches, but submit to our research entities, submit to persons in Jamaica. We had to submit all over the place just to say we want to follow all the correct protocols. But we haven't had any real resistance. I think maybe if we have resistance, it might be persons who say, well, maybe that's not a thing for any church. And even that will allow us to learn. Because now we're not just going into the church, we're actually asking the church leaders, tell us how you feel. So we're sending around a survey to them and saying, tell us how you feel about this. What do you think we can do better? And that's a good reason why we haven't just jumped into everywhere and scale up, because we want to learn as we move along and not impose on people. But we haven't had any significant resistance. I think that churches that were already on board with this, and churches naturally want to improve people's well-being, let's say. Churches want to improve people's well-being. It's usually spiritual. So bringing the idea that we also want to improve well-being in a physical way was not a big jump for the church. It's not a big jump. So we've had no sort of resistance from them.
Yeah, and certainly in most churches, I think there's a healthcare unit. They go by various names. So the church itself, yeah, it does really seem like a very good place to start. So let's say that there is a leader of a church listening now, and he or she wants to have his or her church involved in this program. How would that person go about getting this done?
Yeah, so you can email or WhatsApp us, basically. So email, WhatsApp, or call 285-2027, right? So that's our study number, 285-2027. We also have an email address at htncontrol_churches@outlook.com. That's htncontrol_churches@outlook.com. And you can email us at that as well. And what we do then is that we have a conversation with you about how's the best way to interact with the church. Some persons send around our videos and our flyers, and their church members come to us at the GACBRC for one-on-one visits, if that's most convenient. Some churches, we go to the church and we talk, and as we talk, there are nurses and persons around. Maybe we have about seven people and they just following the COVID-19 protocols, take your blood pressure right there and then. We found that to be the most effective way because people are in their setting. They don't have to come to the doctor per se. They don't have to stand in a long line. They're already seated. They're already there. This is something that they would have done anyway, and we take their blood pressure there on site. We've even had cases where we've gone to the church and the church members would see somebody, because we've gone like on a Saturday and the church members would see somebody out on the street and tell them, come and get your blood pressure taken. And that person, it's not for members only, it's for the church, is just a hub. And the persons just come in, they have their blood pressure taken, you see if they're high or not, and they're part of the study if their blood pressure is uncontrolled. So it's just basically using the space as a hub and a place where people can come and also get that sort of management done. Again, just a community service and trying to understand the condition. So these are people who would not have gone and stand in any long lines. We're trying to get at that health-seeking behavior that says, boy, hypertension. And the thing is, we have found people as young as 15 with high blood pressure. We have found people with 200 and something and had to say, go to the doctor now, please. We are finding things in the community. So it's been very good so far. So if any treater wants to get their church involved, please contact us. And we're going to do this for quite some time. Again, COVID means that it's slow. We're going very slowly, yes, but we're taking our time and we're working our way through within all the COVID protocols.
And you had mentioned two values there, because my next question to you was going to be, what successes have you had to date since you started your pilot program?